go!
And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and I am still in Kununurra in the northeast of Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive fan, and I'm still at home, but not for very long, in Stavanger in southwestern Norway.
Yeah, so we're both on planes tomorrow going completely different places and directions. I'm going home and you're on a trip.
Yeah, such is our life, hey? Di, I know you're absolutely exhausted because it is late your time. So I'm going to kick this off and I'm going to ask you three words to describe this week's race in Monaco. Three words.
Absolute snooze fest.
Oh, three words.
I fell asleep on the couch. I tried so hard to stay awake for it, but I just found it so boring. There were a couple of little incidents, a couple of times where I heard Crofty's voice go up in volume and open one eye and I'd be like,
ugh. Stay away.
What about you? What are your three words?
My three words for the whole weekend were going to be barriers, blocking, and boring. So barriers because we saw a lot of people into the barriers during qualifying and race across all the different formulas. Blocking because it was a ridiculous tactic employed in this race, which we will get into. And boring, that is self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Shall we start with qualifying?
A good result for Lando Norris. He wasn't even in my top three predictions when we were talking about this last week. Good result. Good result for Lando. Happy to see Charles Leclerc in the top in P2 in quali and then Oscar in P3. What happened in quali? Remind me.
Well, honestly, there really wasn't that much. So we had Antonelli ran into the barrier on the Nouvelle chicane and his front tyre came off at the end of Q1. So, but he managed to get out of Q1 because he had posted a fast enough time. I think he was in.
That's right.
Yeah, he posted a fast enough time to get into Q2.
Mm-hmm.
And then Q2 at about 10 minutes and 8, there was a red flag out because Russell managed to lose power in the tunnel and he looked rather stupid sitting there trying to steer his car out of the tunnel as all the marshals were pushing him. But that was pretty much the only, the upsets, maybe you can call them, that we had in qualifying. Otherwise, like you said, Norris qualified in P1, Leclerc, Piastri, Hamilton, Verstappen, Hadjar, Alonso, Ocon, Lawson, and Albon rounded out the top 10.
First time Lawson's ever qualified in the top 10 this year. So that's a great result for him. A great result for Hadjar. So Carlos didn't make it through in 11th. A bit of an unexpected quali, just not. I mean, I love Monaco. I've been to Monaco. I love the historic nature of Monaco, and I actually really like that Formula One brought in a rule to try and make the Monaco Grand Prix more exciting with a two pit stop rule, but it just didn't work. And it just caused the teams to play in a team and slow down to cause a gap so the other team member, other driver could do a pit stop and return to the race in a gap.
Yeah.
It was just so dull. I watched they interviewed Alex Albon and he's just so unhappy. He's like, I know people watching at home would have found this boring. I was ready to grab a pillow. That's what he said. And he said, and I'm sure I've made other drivers angry. If I was them, I'd be feeling exactly the same. It's not the way we want to go racing and it's not what we want to see. I mean, props to the FIA to try and make Monaco a bit more exciting, but didn't work. Didn't work.
And actually at the end of the race, Espen, my partner, for everyone playing along at home, he said to me, you watch, they won't have this rule next year.
No, they
because
won't.
They tried. And like you said, in the race, we saw so many people literally driving slow to hold up the race. And there are no rules and there's no way to police people driving slow because how do you do that? There's no rules in the rule book for people slowing up the rest of the field. And two of the most obvious instances of that were the racing bulls.
That's what Alex Albon said. They started it.
They
started the trend.
We had Lawson holding up the entire field behind them so that Hadjar could get his two stops in for free and they could keep track position. And then they swapped over and the favour was returned. And so then Williams did the same thing. And
yeah,
I don't know, it felt dirty.
It felt icky. It wasn't racing. It was a game of pit stops. They were more focused on stops and gaps than they were on racing. And that's not what we signed up for.
No. And I found it quite interesting because this week I did actually have on in the background the Formula 2 and the Formula 3 and even the Porsche supercars as I was packing, cleaning, working, doing all the things that I have to do on the weekend. And there were some massive collisions actually in those races in the first lap because you can race more because their cars are narrower. So in F2, I think there were 9 people that didn't finish the race and there's only 22 cars in F2.
Wow.
But 9 people didn't finish the race because there was a pile up at the start because people went racing. People tried to overtake. And obviously that's not the outcome that you want. But there were more overtakes on the track. Obviously not as many as you see in, you know, races where you've got much more track space. But it was more interesting to watch that because there was stuff happening and people weren't playing. I hate saying they're playing dirty, but it just feels dirty. So, yeah, I guess there's not really that much to talk about from the race, really, is there? I mean, there were some grid penalties that we got given after qualifying.
Ollie Bearman, a 10-place grid penalty for, I mean, that was for overtaking during a red flag.
It was the LED screen. Yeah. He didn't see the LED screen.
No. 10 places. Harsh. It's there for a reason, but harsh.
Yeah. And then Stroll actually got four place grid penalty.
Two separate penalties.
Yes. He had a 1-place grid penalty and then a 3-place grid penalty. So one was for causing a collision with Leclerc and the other was for impeding. And Hamilton also got a penalty for impeding, a 3-place grid penalty. So it shuffled around the race order a bit, the starting grid, but that's all I have to say about the rest of it.
Absolute snooze fest. But so just running through the results quickly, it was Norris won his first Monaco Grand Prix.
Really
nice to see his mum and dad there. Charles Leclerc in second in the Ferrari. Oscar Piastri, the Australian, in the McLaren in third, rounding out the podium. And then Max Verstappen, who pitted on the last lap to get his second pit stop in before the end of the race, finished in fourth in Red Bull. Hamilton in the other Ferrari in fifth. Hadjar in Racing Bulls, sixth. Ocon in the Haas in seventh. Lawson in eighth in the Racing Bulls. Albon and Sainz, both the Williams, 9th and 10th. And Russell, God, he was angry during the race, wasn't he?
Yeah. I was just going to say, after you read out that top 10, I was just looking at the grid order. And it was exactly as it started, except we're missing Alonso because Alonso retired on lap 38 because he had smoke coming out the back of his car. And he has recently come out and said he has to be one of the most unlucky drivers on the grid. And I think that kind of proves it because he was on track to score his first points in and get a P6.
Super unlucky for Alonso. But yeah, exactly right. Like despite this new rule trying to mix things up, it hasn't. So they've tried to mix things up with the two pit stop rule, but it just hasn't worked. Qualifying order is the same as the race result, bar a retirement.
Yeah. I guess when people are playing the strategy game and holding each other up to try and get a big enough gap to pit stop, that's exactly what happens. And I mean, the only other things really that did happen, Bortoleto went into the barriers on lap one, but it was just a virtual safety car. There was nothing big that happened there. Mm-hmm. He managed to continue racing. Lap 9, Gasly retired because he ripped the front left tyre off after hitting the back of Tsunoda.
He might get a penalty or something from that. I haven't heard anything yet.
For next week. Then, we had Alonso retiring. And then George Russell you mentioned that he was very, very angry. And he was, because he was being held up by Alex Albon, something chronic. Yeah. And he took it into his own hands to cut the corner of the chicane and gain a track advantage. And you heard him on the radio say, I'll take the 5-second penalty. I don't care.
Yeah.
And tried to keep racing. And he got slapped with a 20-second drive-through penalty for that. So he was not very happy.
He was not very happy. He just didn't want to drive behind Alex Albon because he thought Alex Albon was driving erratically, because Alex Albon was driving super slow and slamming on the brakes to make a gap for Carlos Sainz. So,
yeah.
No, totally boring. All right, well, let's move on.
Sorry, guys, if you wanted any more chat.
There's nothing else to say. From a racing fan's point of view, it was an epic fail. Oh, actually, my favorite moment at the Monaco Grand Prix was on the podium when Princess Charlene was handing out the trophy, and she had the trophy for second place, and she had to walk past Oscar, who was on the third dais on the podium, and she shook his hand and he pointed, no, not me, that guy down the end. I didn't finish second. And then she must have said, no, I'm congratulating you. And he was like, oh, and then he shook her hand. And I thought that was just like, that made me laugh. I thought that is so Australian, going, nah, I didn't get second, it's that guy. Monaco. We have both been to Monaco several times. You've heard me bang on about how I've been to the race 10 years ago and how awesome it was and how expensive it was. And it's probably doubled in price since then.
I would say so.
Yes, yes. But if you are a Formula One fan looking to go to the Monaco Grand Prix, my hot tip would be to stay in Nice and catch the train. It's really easy to do. Nice is only about less than an hour by train to Monaco. It's much cheaper. Finding accommodation in Monaco during the Grand Prix, near impossible, unless you know someone or willing to pay top dollar, you know, maybe sell a kidney. Yeah.
You could also stay in Menton, which is the other direction, because Menton's actually really, really close and it's just on the border.
But what's it like during race week? And can you get to Monaco easily? Is there a train?
Train. Yeah.
There is a train.
Cool. So you could go either way. The train line between Nice and, or actually all the way up the coast, is so good, because I have caught the train from Antibes into Nice. Antibes into Monaco. And I think, again, it's only an hour and a bit. And obviously Nice is bigger, and it's a city, so there's probably 1,000,005 apartments you could rent if you wanted to. But the last time I was in Monaco was only last month. I was walking through and they had set up majority of the track, which was really cool. Really, really cool to see, because the other two times that I have been, we've been just in normal times and walking around. I think I've walked the track about 4 or 5 times now. But this time I actually got to do it with all the barriers up, with the grandstands up, with all of the paddocks set up. And that was really, really cool to see, because it really gave you a great sense of where everything is and how it all looks on race day, because it was the actual race.
Yeah.
So that was cool. I think one of the things that I always, always, always like to say about Monaco is people misunderstand the principality and they think that you have to be bathing in money to be able to visit Monaco and enjoy yourself. And what people have to remember is that this is a place that real people live and real people work. So there are sections of it that real people can afford to go to.
So hang on a minute. I mean, Formula One drivers, I mean, they are like flesh and blood and like human, but they're not real people, you know, like all these gazillionaires that live there, like, they're not real.
They're not real people.
They're not real. They're not normal. Like, they're a different
echelon. No, they're artificial.
Yeah, everyday Joe. They're not. I guess your point is it is a living, breathing, working city.
It's a working city, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a Disneyland on show. Well, country, actually, not city.
But, and I think that's the impression that people get, is that, you know, it's all this big flaunting of wealth, which, yes, it is.
It is.
It absolutely is.
It is.
But if you don't go, so obviously go to Casino Square and look at the ridiculous parade of ridiculous cars that goes through there every day and the ridiculous amount of people that stand there and watch it and the ridiculous amount of people that stand next to the cars that are not theirs and have photos with them.
Don't knock it. It's a cool thing to do. Don't knock it.
I went. I definitely went and I loved watching the car parade. I just didn't take photos with other people's cars, but it is a cool, like you have to go and see it.
Yeah.
You have to go and see it and you have to go and see, you know, Hotel de Paris. You have to go and see the casino. You have to walk through and see all of the high-end boutiques.
The casino, you have to pay to get into the casino.
You do.
You have to pay to get in to a place where you're going to lose money. So it, to me, I have done it and I will be upfront and say I'm anti-gambling. So I don't really like any form of gambling, but I did go in because it's Monaco, it's the casino.
Yeah.
And inside, I will say, despite the grandeur and the architecture and how luscious it is, the same sad looking people were in that posh casino that I've seen in other casinos around the place, you know, wearing secondhand suits, looking down and trodden. Yeah, this was in the middle of the day where you're hardcore gamblers.
Yes.
When they're there, it's not a James Bond film of full of glamorous people. It really opened my eyes, that experience. I was like, here we are in Monaco where I feel like every second person is dripping in jewels and furs and
carrying their Louis Vuitton handbags and
ridiculous amounts of wealth. Seeing a Ferrari is almost pedestrian in Monaco. Yep. You need to see the special, the specced up cars or other makes of cars, you know.
What did I see when I was last there? A Rolls-Royce Phantom, you know. You need to see the Maseratis, the Rolls-Royce Phantoms, the Aston Martin. You know,
the Lamborghinis, you know, all of them.
Yeah.
They after a while, you're like, oh, another Lambo, oh, another Ferrari. It's been original, you know.
There's a Lambo boat that I saw both the last times that I was there, and that is sexy. So, yeah, there's a Lamborghini boat.
Speaking of boats, I saw online a Fiat 500 boat, someone that's made a little boat that looks like a Cinquecento, a little Fiat 500, and it was in baby blue. It was the cutest thing. I was like, oh, but a little bit poshed up, not a rustic old.
Yeah, yeah. But I think talking about all this richness and grandeur and then you saying that you went to the casino and you were reminded that there are still people from all walks of life in Monaco. And there really is. One of my favorite parts of Monaco is Le Condamine, which is, if you're familiar with the racetrack and if you're familiar with the harbour, Le Condamine's kind of like top left of the harbour. And that's more of the kind of, you know, everyday person kind of area. And one of the things that I will never, ever, ever forget is we were staying in Villefranche-sur-Mer, which is one stop away from Monaco. And we... It's amazing. And it's we took a trip in to Monaco and we had the cheapest meal of our holiday in Monaco.
Yeah, right.
So just
it all depends on where you go. Yeah. You have a beer at Cafe de Paris and it'll be the most expensive beer you'll have in your life. But
exactly.
Or
you go to the brewery, which is right down on the harbour there. And if you, again, if you're familiar with the track, it's kind of underneath the pit lane when it's all set up. They've got a brewery there and you can have a beer locally brewed in Monaco and it is on par with, if not cheaper than, what you would pay for a beer in Nice. It's all about where you go and what you choose to spend your money on. I mean, we also had a really beautiful dinner with a view overlooking the harbour at a really beautiful restaurant. And I was so surprised at how I won't say affordable because it was, you know, it was a higher end meal, but I was expecting to pay a lot more for that meal. But we were just smart about it and we didn't order, you know, four courses. We had mains and a dessert and a drink each and it was affordable.
In Nice, there's really expensive places there as well and you can be ripped off and there's lots of tourist traps there. So you've got to be a discerning traveller.
Exactly, exactly. And I will say some of the things that I feel like you have to see in Monaco, you have to take the free bus up to the gardens, up to the Prince's Palace, and you can do a tour of the Prince's Palace. And look, I am the worst when I have to listen to history. because I switch off in about 2 seconds flat and don't like listening to it at all.
Oh, I kind of like it, but it depends on who's delivering it.
I finished uni too many years ago to listen to someone lecture me, but this is like you put headphones on and it's a self-guided one.
Oh, yeah, they're boring.
And I mean, it was a really cool place to see, though, because the prince has put so much time and effort into restoring this palace and kind of stripping back and rediscovering, I guess, all the beautiful frescoes that were there. Seeing that the gardens up there are beautiful, and that old area of Monaco is so beautiful, and you have the most incredible view back over Monaco from that. I also suggest going to the beach, which I've just had a mental blank on the name right now, but they have a beautiful little beach there, and all around it's a pebbly beach, so you don't get sand on your feet, which is really nice. And it's just a nice experience to be able to swim, and they have beautiful restaurants and bars and everything all the way along. Likely going to cost you a fair bit to eat there, but it's the experience. If that's what you want, if you want to sit by the beach, by all means. I don't know, did you get to see and do anything else when you were there that you highly recommend?
Well, there's one thing I want to do in Monaco is go and see the prince's private car collection, which...
I did that! Yes!
Which I haven't done, which I would love to do, because he's got a solid, impressive collection of cars. So you've been.
Yes, and I can't believe I forgot to mention that. It's actually along... If you walk the track, it's along the track, so you can kind of make it a part of your walk around. And it is incredible. Daniel Ricciardo has a helmet that he signed and gave to the prince. It's up on the wall. Obviously, there are Formula One cars. There's lots of Formula One references. There are lots of videos and interactive kind of things. But some of the coolest parts, like, he has collected the cutest little Fiats. You know, the ones with the basket doors and the basket seats? He's got, you know, a couple of those. He's got some really, really old school cars from like the 20s. It's a really, really cool collection. So even if you're not the biggest Formula One fan, it's a cool thing to go and see, because you don't have to know about Formula One to enjoy it. There are all these other historic cars that, even if you're not the biggest car fan, you're going to think the Fiat is cute. So
and the historic Grand Prix is another event I would love to go to at Monaco, just to see cars from yesteryear racing. I love classic cars, so that would be another thing on my list. And also Monaco hosts a rally as well, World Rally Championship event,
and an E-Prix. They've got all lots of motor racing, but they're really, really good with their events. They have ballets, operas, orchestras, all sorts of things all throughout the year. Monaco has lots of great events throughout the year. Just to recap that, it would be the Prince's Palace, the view from up the top there, the gardens, go to the brewery, go to the Prince's car collection, walk the track, walk through around Casino
Cafe
Square.
De Paris. Yeah.
Yeah, Cafe de Paris, gird your loins, but get a drink there. You know, hold on to your wallets. Get a coffee there, get a drink there.
Have a beer, splurge. If you're going to spend all the money to go to Monaco, you may as well enjoy yourself. You don't have to be crazy, but just have a drink. If it costs you $35 for a beer, so be it.
Exactly. Chalk it up as an experience.
Now, Monique, what do they eat in Monaco, and what did you cook? Did we do anything this weekend or did you skip it again?
Skipped it again.
There's another page out of the excuse book, kids. Get ready. I'm listening.
No, that's okay. I won't make excuses. I was this close to making a fougasse, which is the Monégasque. It's like their version of a focaccia. So they're typically shaped like a leaf, and it's just it's basically like a focaccia type thing. So I was going to do it, but didn't. I'll spare you the excuse. My other option was going to be socaire, which I'm probably not pronouncing that right, but it's basically like a chickpea flour, not a pancake, more like it's like a thick pancake, almost like a pikelet. So that's another very traditionally Monégasque thing. But we did have crepes for breakfast. So I'm kind of sort of a little bit off the hook, because that's close to Monaco, it's French. So
Let me give you a lesson in PR, Mon. Lead with that. Say it with conviction, and you would have got us all excited about Monegasque grapes.
I couldn't lie and say that I hadn't made something completely Monegasque.
I'm only teasing you, because if I don't tease you, who will?
I cop it all the time from Espen. So, you know, it's fine. I'll just take it from all angles. That's fine. An important thing to note about Monegasque cuisine is that it is so heavily influenced by France and Italy because of, obviously, it was at once, like the borders have all changed and it was ruled by different countries, and they're so close to Italy, they're so close to France, that it kind of just becomes like a Mediterranean kind of cuisine.
Oh, fun fact. In Nice, so Nice, the distance from Nice to Italy, it's not very far, right?
Not
they
at all.
Can't make a cappuccino to save their life anywhere in Nice that I found. And I've been there a couple of times and I have searched high and low. I just can't fathom how a place so close to the birthplace of cappuccinos, oh, the coffee in France is bad and the coffee in Nice is bad.
What about the coffee in Monaco?
I don't remember having a coffee in Monaco. I drank beer.
Brilliant.
Well, this was the second race of a triple header. The next one is in Spain. So predictions, Mon, who are you going for?
I totally muffed up this week's predictions for Monaco.
I think we both got 2 out of 3, didn't we, for this one?
Well, if we go with our top three picks, we definitely got 2 out of 3 in the top three, not necessarily in the right order. But, you know, well, I guess go us. But, okay, let's say I'm going to say that we're going to have, I reckon Verstappen's going to come back fighting hard. I'm just going to go for the top three here. I'm not going to give any particular order just yet. I'm going to go Verstappen. I'm going to go, who else am I going to go? I reckon what?
Just three names.
Well, the reason that I'm hesitating is because I go with the same three almost every week. I'm going to say Verstappen, Russell, and Norris. Verstappen, Piastri, and Norris.
Oh, lucky I'm sitting down. Okay.
I know. Right. I'm so sorry for that accidental shock. That was not actually a shock. Well, that was not actually my prediction.
All right. I am going to say Piastri. I'm feeling Charles Leclerc has got his mojo back. So I'm going to say Leclerc.
Love it. Love it.
I think Norris is going to be on a high after this race. Yeah. And he's off social media now. I think he's got a brain coach or something. So he's in the some sort of zen mode, which he needed. And it's obviously working. So good for him. I'm really gunning for Oscar for world champion. So I don't really want Norris getting too close. He's already close enough. We're only 3 points behind Oscar now after his win in Monaco. So I'll go Verstappen. So Piastri, Leclerc, Verstappen are my top three for both quali and the race.
Nice. I really, really, really hope that this week was a sign of good things to come for Ferrari, because they had a shocker of a week last week, and to see them come back to where they were this week is heartwarming and
it's encouraging.
That's the word I was looking for, encouraging. Hopefully you're right. I would like to see that, but my prediction was obviously different. One last thing that I wanted to bring up before we close out the episode was the incident with Jack Doohan last week. The day after we released our episode, Jack Doohan actually had to come out on social media and tell people to stop harassing his family online, because there was a fake image that was shared around. Don't know why people do this in the first place and create fake images like that. That can be so damaging, because it was very hard to tell that it wasn't real. And he and his family caught a big barrage of abuse from people, and for him to come out publicly and say that it had to be stopped, it means it got pretty bad. At no point in time is it ever okay to hurl abuse at anyone online, in person. It's sport, guys. calm your farm.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I just wanted to.
Well said.
I just wanted to mention that. Yeah. Because I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. It's happened before when Latifi crashed in the closing stages of a race that determined world champion. It was actually when Max took the world champion title. And it happened because Latifi crashed, bought out the safety car, and then we had a one or two lap shootout at the end.
Oh, Abu Dhabi 2021. I still have nightmares about that. Yeah.
Right, I think we all do. Probably no one more than Latifi, because he was completely silent and offline for a good amount of time after that. And when he did come back online, it was to tell people that he needed the abuse to stop. And it's just ridiculous that it gets to that point where people think that they can say such awful things to people over sport. I mean, yell at your TV, by all means, go for it.
Yeah, well, the Colapinto fans might have been a bit quieter this weekend, given Franco qualified dead last and it just hasn't really been getting the results that Alpine have probably hoped for. But it's still early days. Give him a chance. Just quickly, the driver standings at the moment, we've got Oscar still in the lead. 3 points behind is Lando Norris, his teammate, the McLaren. Max Verstappen and Red Bull in third. He is... Oh, maths on the fly. 22 points behind. Lando on 136, George Russell on 99, Charles Leclerc on 79, Lewis Hamilton in the second Ferrari in 63 points, Kimi Antonelli seventh in the Mercedes on 48 points, Alex Albon on 42 points in the Williams, Esteban Ocon in the Haas, 20 points, and Isaac Hadjar in 10th place with 15 points. Good on you, Hadjar. Oh.
Hats off to all these guys in the midfield that are, you know, making inroads in their perhaps not, you know, not great cars, but good on them.
And that in the team standings, it's pretty boring. It's McLaren on 319 points, then Mercedes in second place on 147. So 319 to 147. That's a massive gap. Then Red Bull on 143, then Ferrari on 142. Then Williams on 54. So second, third and fourth place is really close, but McLaren with their two drivers that are consistently scoring good points most races. Oh, I heard a stat on the broadcast that Oscar Piastri has scored points in the last 34 races, making him the third longest driver to score points every race.
Wow. So he's got the third longest stint.
Yep.
Good on him. I love these stats that they come out with.
In his third year of Formula One racing, right? So let's just bring it back to perspective, like put it in perspective. All right. Well, I think that's a wrap, Mon.
Yeah. You need to go to sleep. I need to finish my article before I go away. So let's do it. Well, first of all, thanks for listening. And if you guys enjoyed what you heard and have enjoyed what you've been listening to thus far, please leave us a rating and a review on any of your favorite podcast listening apps. It's always very, very helpful for us. You can also follow along on our social media. We're on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Facebook. You can also email us at andawaywego.f1podcast@gmail.com if you've got something a little bit longer that you'd like to say to us.
Thank you so much, Mon. It's been fun reliving memories of Monaco. Not this race, though. That's one I'd like to forget. Thank you, guys, for listening. Yeah, we'd love to hear your opinions on this two stops.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato.
Let's do it.
Rule. I think everyone's probably in agreement. It was pretty boring. Anyway, until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato.
Let's do it.